Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our conference call on rising gas prices and the impact on family budgets. Today, we have two senior fellows from the Center for American Progress, Christian Weller, PhD, and Daniel J. Weiss. We'll both discuss different aspects of this paper. If you have any questions on the paper or if you need a copy of the report, you can email Daniela Gibbs Leger at dleger@americanprogress.org or by calling her at 202-682-1611. As soon as Christian and Dan have presented, we'll take some questions. So, Christian, why don't you begin?
Thank you very much, Theo. Thank you very much to everybody for joining us this morning. My name is Christian Weller. I'm a senior fellow here at the Center for American Progress in the Economic Policy Group. I would like to highlight three important points about the report we're releasing today. The first thing is swings in gas prices have become much larger in this business cycle, which started in March 2001, than they were in the 1990s. These large swings in gasoline prices make it hard for families to adjust, both in the short run and in the long run. And the sharp up and down movements in prices tend to have spillover effects into the economy at large. That would be the third point. Let me go through these three points in more detail. First of all, price volatility. If we compare gas prices to, and in this paper we do, to another indicator that has been usually very volatile in this business cycle, stock prices, and what you find is that gas prices have sharper up and down movements than stock prices. For instance, there were 9 3-month periods during which gasoline prices increased by 20% or more, but zero such periods for stocks. You find this also on the downside. During this business cycle, gasoline expenditures relative to disposable income are 2.5 times as volatile as the next volatile consumption item, in this case, cars. This volatility of gasoline expenditures is almost twice as large as it was in the 1990s. Despite all of this volatility, though, I think it's important to keep in mind that gas prices are trending much higher over the course of this business cycle, i.e. since March 2001. They are at the highest level in 26 years, only a few cents away from the previous record set in 1981. Once that record is broken, gasoline prices would be in inflation-adjusted terms at the highest level since the 1920s. This year alone, inflation-adjusted gas prices rose by 37%, and since the start of the business cycle, inflation-adjusted gas prices increased by 96%. The important point, though, I want to get back to is volatility. Why do we care about volatility? The sharp price increases that we've seen this year, last year, the year before, make it hard for people to adjust, since buying a car, setting up a carpool, telecommuting, and other mechanisms to cope take time to organize or often impractical. For instance, telecommuting is impractical for somebody who works as a waiter. Sharp declines, on the other hand, of gas prices, sharp declines make it hard for people to plan over the long run. Price signals are basically out of whack. People just don't know if it makes sense for them to buy a more fuel-efficient car or not, not knowing where prices ultimately will end up. The most vulnerable in this current scenario are low-income families. Low-income families, families in the bottom 20% of the income distribution, paid in 2005, the last year for which we have data, 9% of their total income on gasoline, compared to 2% for high-income families. In addition, middle-income families may also be vulnerable to the current price increases. They spend about, middle-income families spend about 5% of their income on gasoline. Put differently, a 30% increase of gasoline expenditures would be equivalent to about 1.5% of income. That, just to put this in perspective, this is about the same as the average increase in debt payment over the course of this business cycle, meaning families would basically have to find the same amount of additional money over the course of 4 or 5 months this year as they had to pay for the extra debt that they've taken on over the last 6 years. So clearly, there's a much bigger jump, a much bigger burden coming right now from higher gasoline expenditures. The problem is that families often cannot adjust their driving habits quickly, largely because most people drive themselves to work. 79% of people drive themselves to work. That is, other items will get squeezed. And that leads me to the third point, spillover into the economy at large. In a recent survey, 40% of respondents said that they would take fewer shopping trips. 38% said saying the shop they will shop closer to home, and 31% said they would shop for sales more often. So clearly that's part of it. Often that affects especially apparel shopping. It also affects restaurants and some of the driving for vacation. I'll come back to that in a second. The other part we found in this paper is that during the current business cycle, since March 2001, there were 15 quarters out of 24, meaning close to two-thirds of the time, when gas expenditures and personal saving went into opposite directions. So on average, families often dip into their savings, and savings are already low. We've had negative savings rate for the last 8 quarters in a row. My expectation is that personal saving will drop again in the middle of the summer as prices continue to rise. Another adjustment mechanism that seems to be coming up is that people take shorter vacation trips. We include a few illustrative examples in the paper. Let me just go mention two of them. If somebody was planning to take a trip from New York to the Outer Banks based on gas prices in December of last year, they would at this point make it as far as the middle of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel and then have to turn around. The same, somebody planning on going from Chicago to Nashville would make it as far as somewhere between Upton and Bonnieville, Kentucky, before they have to turn around, given their budget. With that, let me end my quick run through the numbers and turn it over to my colleague, Dan Weiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Christian. Hi, my name is Daniel J. Weiss. I'm a senior fellow and director of climate strategy here at the center. I just want to talk a little bit, very briefly, about what is behind the increase in gasoline prices. There's generally thought of as several factors. First, the high price of oil. Oil is not at a historically high level right now, but it has been increasing due to the fact that we get a big chunk of our oil from unstable regions. As you know, we get 60% of our oil from overseas, and when, a pipeline in Nigeria is blown up, the price of oil goes up. The price of oil is about half of the price of gasoline is the price of oil. And therefore, there's what some people think of as a terror or speculative premium that goes along with getting oil from an unstable region. Second is that there has been a decline in gasoline refining capacity here in the U.S. due to consolidation in the oil industry. Just yesterday, the Government Accountability Office, they just changed their name, says that high gasoline prices are due to three factors, which is refinery capacity offline, increased demand for gasoline, and lower fuel inventories. And because of that, particularly refining capacity, it makes gasoline prices high even when oil prices are not that high by historical levels. Now, the third piece of this is that the relatively tight capacity and refining has helped to boost oil company profits by a huge amount. Just in 2005, 2006, and the first quarter of 2007, the big five oil companies have had combined profits of $250 billion, a quarter of $1 trillion for the big five oil companies in the last 2 years. Valero Energy, which is one of the major gasoline refiners in this country, has made $11 billion in net profits in 2005 and 2006. These companies have an economic incentive to ensure that there's not too much refining capacity, because that would lead to lower gasoline prices and therefore lower profits. And lastly, the last reason for higher gasoline prices is that the U.S. has done little to reduce demand for gasoline. In fact, there are alternatives out there, such as E85, which is 85% ethanol, that there are 5 million cars on the road that could use E85, but yet it's barely available. There's only 600 service stations in the entire country that sell E85 to the public. In California, for example, there's only one station in San Diego that sells E85. So there's no access to alternative fuels that could lower demand for regular gasoline. And lastly, there's been no improvement in fuel economy over the last 20 years. Our fuel economy standards have been stuck at the same level since 1986. So if you add all these factors together, high price of oil due to getting from unstable regions, reduced refining capacity, and no ability or little government policy to reduce demand, and adds up to higher gasoline prices and enormous oil company profits. I think that we're ready to take questions now.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel, and now we'll open it up to questions.
Our first question comes from Joanne Morrison from Reuters. Please state your question.
Hi, Christian, this might be more of a question for you, but Daniel, you had mentioned something about the ethanol food prices, though, over the past few years, have been going up dramatically, and a number of economists attribute that to this whole demand for corn and the whole ethanol thing. So how do you, that in effect also is quite a pinch on the consumer pocket as well, and how would you address that issue?
I'm not an expert on ethanol prices, I have to admit.
Right.
I understand that the demand has been increasing and that has raised some doubt. But I think the question here is more the stability of prices and finding alternatives to fuel, to gasoline, to ultimately ensure. I mean, it's a simple diversification issue, right? You do want to have some sort of a risk insurance, essentially, for consumers, so they don't have price spikes by 30, 40, 50% over a very short period of time. And that's ultimately what we're concerned about. And the more you can broaden the sources of where your gasoline or your fuel comes from, the less likely you're going to be exposed to those. And I think even though there are price increases in the ethanol market, I would think that just simply as it would be true for any product, for any commodity, the more you can diversify that, the fewer volatility you have at the back end in terms of at prices at the pump.
Yes, and remember, GAO testified yesterday in the House Energy Committee that one of the factors in high gasoline prices was increased demand. The ability to buy alternatives and put them in your car are limited by the availability of the fuel. Like I said, E85, which could go in the 5 million flexible fuel vehicle cars that we have around the country, is only available in 600 service stations across the country, predominantly in the Midwest. So California only has one station. Michigan has 40 stations. Massachusetts has only one station. That, as an alternative, which could reduce demand for gasoline, is just not available.
Our next question comes from Tara Carr from Scripps Howard News. Please state your question.
Yes. So what are you anticipating to be the alternative for families who cannot afford their typical trips because of gas prices? What do you anticipate them to do instead?
I think it depends a little bit on the income limits. I think at the very high end, you probably won't see that much in terms of adjustments, largely because gasoline prices don't make up that much. In the middle income ranges, where we're talking 5-6% of income, that is a serious hit. Like a 30% increase in gasoline expenditures is a serious hit, and people will make all kinds of adjustments. The biggest adjustments probably come on the shopping side, largely on the commuting side, on the going to work side, which is a big expenditure in terms of driving. There aren't that many options. People drive, as I said, 79% drive themselves to work, and they do so for a number of reasons, often because public transportation may not be available where they live, or because carpooling doesn't fit with their overall work schedules, or because telecommuting just doesn't fit with their jobs. As I said, if you think about most service jobs, such as waiters or nurses or janitors, you can't telecommute for those jobs. So the basic point is that for many people, the driving to work part is kind of fixed, at least for the time being. And you see this in the surveys. Where most of the adjustment comes from is in terms of the shopping. People combining shopping trips, people just simply going shopping less, people shopping online, although that doesn't seem to be a big response in the data. And then the other part is going out less to restaurants. Those are kind of the kind of fungible expenditures where people can make adjustments. And then the other response that we highlight in the paper, although that's really more like a middle income response, is the response in savings. People will dip into their savings, they will contribute less to their savings account, and they will take out more money on their credit cards. But that's truly more a response in middle income families. Because at the low end, you have no savings to dip in off, and you don't have credit cards to borrow against.
Our next question comes from Dirk Pretefort from the New Times. Please state your question.
Hi, this question I think is for Dan. I was kind of curious as to how speculation in the commodities market also affects the gasoline price, as far as, you know, fears of a bad hurricane season, fears of where the inventories are at. Although we've never actually run out, it seems to be a fear in there that tends to drive prices up, as far as also the hurricane season too.
Yes, and I think you see this a lot with oil prices, where if you look at oil prices one day and then something in the world that happens that suggests instability, then the price up spot market price of oil will increase a dollar or two in a day. And so, for example, when there's a pipeline leak, when there's a pipeline explosion, when there are, you know, riots, when things are going bad in Iraq, the price of oil will increase. That's not the entire reason for the high oil prices, but it is a part of it. And that's where that part comes in.
Our next question comes from John Funk from The Plain Dealer. Please state your question.
I looked at your paper here online, and so you've accurately described the problem and said how some members of the public might behave. What do you think should be done?
Well, we think that there's a whole series of things that could be done. First, let's try and reduce demand for gasoline, which will therefore reduce its price. Some things that could be done immediately would be to help provide more resources to encourage transit riding. We've already seen in the last year that transit riding has increased to a record level, in part in response to higher gasoline prices. Let's get that number higher. Second, let's make the fuels that are alternatives to gasoline, like E85, much more available than they are today. For the longer term, we ought to see better fuel mileage standards that would, again, reduce demand over the long run for gasoline. And that's not something that will take effect immediately, but if we started, you know, in 2001 when Bush became president, we would have lower demand for gasoline right now and therefore lower prices.
Follow-up question?
Sure.
Where will your report go? Will you give it to Congress? Are you asking Congress to do anything?
We always have the same distribution strategy for our reports. We send it to the press, but we do make sure that members of Congress get it in hand. We give it to members of Congress and their key staffers who work on these issues, both on the economic side as well as the energy side. But that's our standard rollout strategy for all of our reports. We anticipate for most of our issues, that's one of the justifications for us doing these reports, we anticipate a lot of interest in these issues. Let me make one point following up on what Dan said. Just to be very clear, I think fuel efficiency would lower the demand. It may not necessarily reduce the volatility of prices on the front end, but on the other hand, it would reduce the exposure of people to volatility because they're consuming ultimately a lot less gasoline. The alternative fuel issue is something – is basically a diversification strategy. Just like you want to diversify your 401k portfolio, you want to diversify where you're getting your money from, your gasoline from, across a number of different sources.
And one other thing is that we here at the center have done several reports on the benefits of biofuels. You should go to our website, AmericanProgress.org.
Yeah, I'm there.
And look at that. We just released one earlier this year by Jay Caldwell. And we're working with Congress to increase support for biofuels, both in the Farm Bill and through energy legislation.
How about capacity increases? Are you advocating that? Capacity, refining capacity.
Well, there's no question that the oil companies and other refining companies like Valero ought to invest its gigantic profits in expanding refining capacity rather than doing things like buying back its stock, which is what Valero's doing right now. And that is something that would help increase the supply of gasoline.
Our next question comes from Michael Drescher from the Baltimore Sun. Please state your question.
Yes, gentlemen, is there any indication that refining capacity is being taken offline as a result of a calculated strategy, or is this just the workings of the marketplace?
Well, there is not any smoking gun to indicate that sort of thing, but GAO did testify yesterday that taking refining capacity offline has been one of the reasons for high gasoline prices. And that you would think, since gasoline refining is fairly profitable, that with all these billions of dollars, these companies might want to invest in expanding capacity. On the other hand...
Is this Dan by...
Oh, yeah, sorry. This is Dan Weiss. On the other hand, that's not what they're doing with their money. You know, look at ExxonMobil. They have made $75 billion in profits in 05 and 06 combined, which is a world record for any publicly traded corporation, and yet they're not investing their resources in more refining capacity. I won't speculate about the motive, but that doesn't look very good to me.
Our next question comes from Jim Carroll from the Erie Times News. Please state your question.
Oh, hi. You know, I'm seeing other surveys, AAA, Travel Association, looking for a pretty good summer for travel. How does this reconcile? I know the National Retail Federation saying maybe less, and I'm seeing all sorts of conflicting things. Does this vary so much by wealth strata that some people, how much more are some people going to be affected by others? And, you know, how do you explain all these people still apparently saying they'll travel?
Well, there's two aspects here. The one is income. As I said, the typical middle, the average low-income family spends about 9% of their income on gasoline. The typical high-income family spends about 2%. So clearly, there's a lot of variation here. The other part is also regional differences. Gas prices are higher, especially in the Midwest, than in other areas. So that makes a difference in terms of spending. Income varies, obviously, by state. So those things do matter. The most vulnerable in all of this are the low-income families who really – you're basically squeezing a fairly big part of their overall consumption, gasoline, 9% of their total income, pretty hard. And there isn't that much else that can give. The problem is low-income families don't earn that much money relative to the size of the economy to really have a huge effect. But with gas prices jumping as much as they have this year, we expect that we'll see some aggregate reaction, and that seems to affect particularly savings rate, and that's more like a middle class strategy, if you will, that people just simply put less money into their savings account or just simply run up their credit cards more. That seems to be more the strategy for middle income families, which are seeing substantial increases. As I said, a 30% price increase roughly translates into the same kind of price increase or expenditure increase as we've seen on debt payments over the last 6 years. So that is a substantial chunk of change here.
You know, I think this is Dan again. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens this summer. As you know, vehicle miles traveled are down slightly for the first time in over 20 years. And so as prices continue to rise this summer, the question will be, will people travel less? Will they have their stays shorter? Instead of 5 days, they'll go for 3 days. There's all kinds of ways that this can manifest itself where they still end up driving the same amount but end up spending less. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Our next question comes from John Kingsley from Platts. Please state your question.
Yeah, actually, it's John Kingston. Question about your statement that oil companies should be taking their profits and investing in refining. President Bush has stated that his policy is to try to reduce gasoline consumption by 20% over, I've forgotten the calendar date, but yeah, a certain period of time. This is a policy that's garnered a lot of political support. You're talking about biofuels, et cetera. Why should a refining company invest money in building capacity for something that the national policy is to reduce consumption of?
That's an excellent question. President Bush's proposal is a 20% reduction by 2020, I believe. Unfortunately, his recent proposal is to have a bunch of agencies talk about it until he leaves office. So he has really no intention of doing anything to reduce gasoline demand by increasing fuel economy standards. The reason why they ought to be investing in it is that it's still a very profitable business, and that we're not saying we should double our refining capacity, but expanding it beyond where it is today would be of value, particularly since, as we saw with Katrina, oil refining has located a lot in the hurricane belt. And as you know, NOAA just yesterday predicted an above average hurricane season for this coming summer. So the refining capacity ought to be expanded, particularly in places that are less vulnerable to natural threats like that. As Christian said, one of the reasons why oil prices are relatively higher in the Midwest is because they have more limited refining capacity than other parts of the country.
Well, can I follow up? Can you still hear me?
Sure.
Okay. The NPRA has said on more than one occasion that the obvious place to build a new refinery in this country would be in New England, because New England can take crude from the North Sea, can take crude from Africa, and has no refining capacity at all. The northernmost refinery on the East Coast is in the New York, New Jersey area. What do you think the reception would be in New England to proposals for a brand new grassroots refinery there?
I think it would be positive, assuming that it's located in a place that's appropriate for that sort of industrial facility. You know, it's interesting. I believe it was last year President Bush proposed that we build oil refineries on military bases that are about to close or have closed, and not one single oil company took him up on that. So there has been the idea that we need to expand refining capacity. Even George Bush has said that, but the oil companies have not expressed interest in that, as far as I know.
Our next question comes from Dirk Perryfort from the News Times. Please state your question.
Yes, I think this one might be geared more towards Christian. We're talking about people, you know, possibly spending less when they're going shopping, maybe taking less trips out to the restaurant, dipping into their savings, and possibly running up some of their credit card debt. How could that, and I know this may be a difficult question, but how could that affect the economy in general in the larger picture?
I think it could make a bad situation worse. We already have economic growth below 2% at this point. The expectation is it will remain there with consumer spending slowing largely in the wake of the housing boom ending. And there's nothing else that replaces it. We're obviously very worried at this point about investment growth, which has been slow or negative in the last few quarters. So you layer on top of that gas price worries and truly squeezing people out, especially out of the retail market. So I'm not sure that – I mean, clearly, if the economy were humming along a 3.5% growth, it would be a substantially different issue than if we're already below 2%. As I said, it will make a bad situation worse. It won't necessarily be the primary cause for the bad situation. But we already have a substantial slowdown in economic growth since last year. And at this point, no real momentum going forward. And on top of that, you're now cutting off more consumption growth due to higher prices. And that, I think, is the true worry. It just simply will make it harder to get back to faster growth, to higher employment growth, to lower unemployment rates, to higher employment rates, which I think is a much better measure. So it's hard to say how much that is, but let's say ballpark, you can shave higher gas prices may shave off 0.2, 0.3% of growth, which is, given where we are right now, a substantial reduction.
Just a follow-up question. Either one could hit this. As far as where the gas prices are now, is there any hope of them going down at any time soon, or what could people expect as far as that goes? I know that might be difficult, but
if you look at, we have a chart in the paper. If you look at the real inflation-adjusted gasoline prices over the last few years, this is the third big spike in a row. They have come down in the past, but the overall trend has been upward. So the question is somewhat a little bit, when will they come down? Last year took several months before they came down. That's one question. So it may last well into the summer, and that's a question also about refining capacity and other questions. The other part is also, how far will they go down? And then the third question is, when will the next spike come? Given that we have had them with a certain regularity, it's fair to say, and that prices are trending upward right now, that these problems seem to be recurring regularly, that the roller coaster ride will continue unless we change the policies underlying, that is, more refining capacity, alternative fuels, and more fuel efficiency, as we've said.
Our next question comes from Tara Carr from the Scripps Howard News. Please state your question.
Yes. Would you say that gas prices are affecting the prices of other economic things, such as airfare, hotel stay, et cetera? Would you say that the rising gas prices make these things rise as well, or would you say that these things would lower as a result of rising gas prices?
Well, it's the crude prices that would affect particularly gas, the airfares. To my knowledge, none of the airlines have imposed a surcharge yet. I haven't seen any news reports to that regard. That would be the standard response from the airlines. It could very well happen over the summer, although airlines at this point are, I think, a little worried that in the wake of a slowing economy, demand for air travel is also slowing, and they don't necessarily want to cut that off too much. So I think we haven't really seen that much. The important piece, I just looked at this. The important piece, though, I mean, this is why I said, like, it's not gasoline prices, but crude prices. Crude prices haven't risen as much as gasoline prices at the pump this year, which is certainly a novelty to some degree in the data. So other users may not necessarily see quite the spikes. The other part is that airlines often have access to financial market instruments that allow them to smooth out price increases largely by buying options and futures.
Our next question comes from Dirk Perrefort from the News Times. Please state your question.
It's just kind of a follow-up to that previous question in that how it could affect other prices. Specifically, I was kind of concerned with food prices. And obviously, gas is used a lot for transporting goods across the country. Also, petroleum products are used in farming as far as fertilizers and things like that. Could we see an increased cost in food because of the increase in gas prices? And could that also have an adverse effect on some of the lower and middle-income populations?
In the past, it took some time before producer price increases ultimately translated to consumer price increases. That's at least the experience from the last few years. And all of those were temporary jumps that lasted for a few months, but typically disappeared pretty quickly. And the increases in the consumer price were often much more moderate than they were on the producer price index. And that simply has to do with the part that we use less gasoline or petroleum products in the production process than we have in the past. The other part is also that there is, especially in the retail end, a lot of competition. It's harder for companies to pass that on. But it has happened in the last few years. It is often a temporary blip, especially in the end, but it has happened.
One thing I just want to mention, which is this is not related to Christian's just response, is that we're going to have a flash video that highlights a lot of interesting statistics about higher gas prices and public support for various solutions. It's going to be on our website after 1 p.m. today at AmericanProgress.org.
At this time, there are no further questions.
I want to thank everybody for joining us again. This is Theo LeCompte with the Center. If you have further questions for Daniel or Christian, you can contact me at TLECOMPTE at AmericanProgress.org. The report is also available on our website. And as Daniel mentioned, we will have an accompanying video up later this afternoon. Thanks, Daniel, and thanks, Christian, and thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for attending.